listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Hart Lane backs AVB as the fans get behind Spurs. It took a little more than that for Tottenham to get past Hull City in Capital One Cup action last night. The Major League Soccer playoffs got underway too. It was two for Seattle and now they are through. But will the Dynamo or the Impact be joining them in the first round of the playoffs proper? And it was a big night for Bale in the Bernabeu, his home starting debut. And two goals to his name as Madrid slash seven past sorry-looking Sevilla. Welcome to World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you the news and, of course, the views from around the world of football. First and foremost, before we start anything off, before we get our great guest who's joining us on the line later on the show, before Rafa joins me, before we do anything, a big apology from us here at World Football Daily. Sometimes in this hectic world that is myself and Rafa's lives and everybody else who helps out with World Football Daily, things go awry. And like the best laid plans of mice and men, my day yesterday went absolutely terrible. I will be putting my arms up and taking full responsibility, sir, for the show being unable to be put together yesterday. To go into the full story will take far too long, but basically nobody likes to do the amount of driving that I've done between Birmingham and London in the last day or so. So I do apologise to all of the listeners out there who didn't know, who felt aggrieved. It was something that was almost pretty much out of my hands and out of our hands, but we will try and make sure that that never happens again. So a big thank you to you guys for persevering with us last night. Colorado Rapids could not persevere with the Seattle Sounders. Brad Evans and Eddie Johnson getting their names on the score sheet to get a solid 2-0 win in Seattle. They now move on to take on the Portland Timbers coming up this weekend in the playoffs. And tonight we've got Major League Soccer playoffs continuing with the Dynamo against the Impact in Houston. Houston or Houston? Let me know. Houston or Houston? I always used to get in arguments with people. I never remember which side I'm actually on in this argument of pronunciation, of which there are many in my life, I have to say. But the Houston Dynamo, I'm pretty sure I'm a Houston guy. The Houston Dynamo taking on the Montreal Impact to Marco De Vio, the man who finished second in the goal-scoring charts in Major League Soccer this season, but he has had an absolute storm run. I wonder if Alessandro Nesta will be a little more desperate to get his name on and his hands on a Major League Soccer Cup at the end of this season, with he announcing his retirement from football come the end of this year. But the Dynamo taking on the Impact should be an absolute cracker of a game. There was plenty of action going on yesterday evening. Of course, Tottenham squeaking past Hull City. We've also had the games from the League Cup from earlier in the week. Of course, Manchester United getting past Norwich. Moyes and his men doing just enough to get through. We saw an evening yesterday where Joe Hart missed the cut on the bench last night as Pantilimon took the reins in goal for Manchester City. We'll be talking about that a little later on as well. You wonder if there are any implications, or is it just a case that Pantilimon plays those plays those League Cup games anyway. So there's nothing too much for Joe Hart to be worrying about just yet. Your thoughts on that as well. Remember, show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the Facebook page, and you can catch us, the rant line, and you can catch us on the Facebook page as well. It took extra time, 8-7 win for Tottenham to get past Hull City last night, but at least AVB had the backing of the fans after he called them out. We'll be talking about that a little later on. And the implications. Have you ever known a manager to slag off the fans, to say they weren't behind them, and then to get away with it so easily like they have done? Wan-Mata struck for Chelsea on Tuesday night as Arsenal were dumped out by Mourinho's men. Cesar Azpilicueta and Wan-Mata's goal. A lovely strike as well, you have to say. Just think that Mourinho has the edge on Wenger in terms of their battle of wits and minds. Birmingham and Stoke played out an absolutely incredible game. 4-4. Peter Löwenkrantz with a 93rd minute equaliser for Birmingham to make it 3-3 before Kenwyn Jones and Oscar Lee scored for Birmingham and City respectively. Stoke going through 4-2 on penalties though at St Andrews. A magnificent win then for Stoke in an exciting, exciting game. Fulham were knocked out by Leicester City at 4-3 on Tuesday night. Manchester United with that comfortable 4-0 win. Hernandez stepping up again with goals, and he is proving to be a little saviour sometimes for David Moyes in this early part of his tenure, as he always has been, really. Still, to me, one of the most underrated strikers at Manchester United, Javier Hernandez, and should be playing first-team regular football. The other action from the Capital One Cup, West Ham against Burnley. West Ham getting a 2-0 win comfortably in that game. There is one more fixture still to be played. Southampton take on Sunderland. That is the final fixture to be played in the Capital One Cup, but that's taking place next Wednesday on the 6th. It's Halloween today. It's a spooky, spooky day. I think because the British don't really get into Halloween, I've never been trick-or-treating, never done anything like that. We have Halloween parties and stuff. As I said last week, I went as Yap Stam. I thought it was a fantastic Halloween outfit. Has anybody else gone as a footballer on Halloween? And which footballer have you been as? Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 in the Facebook page as well. And I don't mean like zombie footballer. That doesn't count. Anybody can go as a zombie something or an undead something. No, I mean like actually dressing up as the footballer. Doing your hair like Mario Balotelli, for instance, or David Beckham, or doing a Fellaini or something like that. Let us know. I'd love to know if anybody's been able to pull off the full-on look of a footballer on Halloween. And did people get it as well? How well did it go down? Because I don't know. I went as O.J. Simpson once to a Halloween costume. I had a bloody glove and an old O.J. Simpson Buffalo Bills jersey on. And some people thought it was a little bit too close to the line kind of thing. I thought it was quite funny. I didn't do anything like putting brown face paint on or anything like that. So I thought it kept it kind of classy still. But let us know some of your best footballing and sporting Halloween dress-up outfits. It is about that time today to get our first guest of the show ready for us. He is waiting on the line to join us, and he is the ideal man to join us when we want to delve into all things Italian football. And a man who's going to guide us through the murky waters of Italian football is, of course, Goal.com's very own one and only Chris Vokes joining us on the show today. Chris, mate, how are you doing? It's a pleasure to have you back on the show, not just because, obviously, you're the man to talk all things Italian football with, but also because I like to be surrounded by my fellow Sheffield Wednesday fans on the show. So, Chris, mate, it's a pleasure to have you on board. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're safety in numbers at the moment, isn't it, Wednesday?
Yeah, we don't have many of those numbers in the win column or in the points at the moment. So I'll take a massive fans over the points at least. It's quite nice to at least know there's some of us still about. Chris, we need to get into Italian football though. Before we get into tonight's fixture between Roma and Chievo, which is going to be an interesting one and a great opportunity for Roma to extend that lead, take a look back at some of the action from the week, and particularly Milan being able to get a 1-1 draw against Lazio in midweek. That's a reassuring result, surely, for Rossoneri fans.
I'm not sure about that, to be honest. They've taken the lead. We're in a winning position. They've worked in binary recently in home games with a lot of 1-0 home victories. And it looked like they'd get another one against the Lazio side, who, apart from the victory over Cagliari, at the weekend, haven't had the greatest of runs. And so there was a bit of pressure all of a sudden on Vladimir Petkovic, who we've got to remember had a great season with them last season and won them the Coppa Italia. But the fact that Lazio have had a bit of a wobble at the start of the season, not looked particularly great, the fact that Roma across the city are doing as well as they're doing, it's come under an awful lot of pressure. And I think more than anyone, Lazio will be taking that point as a kind of reassuring point at this stage, albeit against a Milan that have struggled so far this season and a long, long way off the pace. It's still Milan away and they've still been doing pretty well in their home games, but for that defeat against Napoli. And I think more than anything, Lazio will be pleased to take away a point, having fallen behind against a side who have got a reasonably good home record.
Where have both of these sides been falling then? Because with Milan, you can point arguably to injuries, you can point to kind of an experience of a group of players that in some particular areas of the pitch haven't been playing too well together. What about Lazio? Where have they been stumbling so far this season, do you think?
Well, just going back to Milan for a second, I think their defence has been the be-all and end-all of their problems, if you like, because if you look at the table, I think there's only about four or five teams with a worse defence than Milan. Milan have got the worst defence in the top half of the table. And that's been, you know, the reason for them being where they are. You know, they conceded, was it two away to Torino, two or three away to Bologna. They just keep conceding goals. And last season they had trouble defending set pieces. This season they just seem to be having trouble defending anything. Lazio, you know, I think there's been this case over the last couple of seasons, I'd say, where to a large extent there's been a bit of pressure put on the likes of Klose and Hernandez to come through with everything. You know, Klose to get all the goals, Hernandez to create them all. And in fact, fans have been turning a little bit on Hernandez in recent weeks, saying, you know, if you're not up to like stepping up to the mark, then what are you doing? And they've only won, as I say, that one Cagliari game in the last five, and they're starting to look at their production. And the fact that they only have Klose and Hernandez, and Candreva has been a little bit off form recently as well, you know, that kind of midfield and forward line, all of a sudden people are starting to question, and that was the one thing that was really going for them over the last couple of years.
Elsewhere midweek, we had the cracking game between Fiorentina and Napoli as well, and Napoli able to edge their way past Viola. Fiorentina, we've kept on talking about measurements and acid tests for them for in fixtures this season, about whether they can show their championship title pushing credentials. Do you think we are seeing that Fiorentina still just aren't quite that cut above the rest and able to make a push with Napoli and Juventus for this area?
I think what we're seeing is that, you know, without Mario Gomez, they miss an awful lot. There were times in the game last night where, the magnificent game, by the way, there were times in that match where they were the team with all of the initiative. They had a lot of the ball. They put some really good moves together. Both sides, it was really to and fro. Napoli were really kept on their heels at times. The two in midfield of Damali and Inla, sorry, Barami and Inla, were really kind of sat in front of the back four for much of the game because Fiorentina were really putting them under pressure, but they just didn't have that killer instinct. Napoli were able to phase out Rossi for the most part, and that left a kind of bit of a hole where Gomez would normally be playing. And as much as Juan Cuadrado had a great game and really got at Napoli's back four at times, they just couldn't seem to turn that mountain of possession at times into something more tangible. And, you know, it's telling that in the games where they've been dominant, they haven't always got the points. And I think that just shows that while Fiorentina have got a very good team and a first 11 or 12 that could really challenge, they don't have the deeper squad that Juventus obviously have. And even from the evidence of last night and the last few games, Napoli also have that kind of strength in depth as well.
Looking at Fiorentina's front line, and it's been discussed so much, the attacking quality that Fiorentina do have, though, going forward. Giuseppe Rossi, obviously he's a player who's been, you know, had his injury problems and whatnot, but seeing him back like this, are you surprised how well he's started this season, considering the amount of time that he's had away from the game?
Oh, yeah, putting it into the context of his injury record of recent yeah, it's a phenomenal start. And he's top scorer in Serie A, and he's really shown what he can do. And I suppose it kind of helped that he was fit by May rather than by August. It meant that he had the full summer, he had the full pre-season. And Fiorentina did very well with Stevan Jovetic a couple of years back when Jovetic had a serious knee injury, missed an entire season. Montenegro actually kind of brought him back for the qualifiers in, I think it was March, whereas Fiorentina held him back because they knew that rushing him back for March or April in a season where they, you know, they weren't particularly going anywhere wouldn't necessarily benefit him longer term. They spent that time with him, made it a kind of long pre-season for him from March to August, and that really benefited him and the team. And I think you've seen the same thing with Giuseppe Rossi, the fact that he was kind of fit towards the end of last season. They weren't going to rush him back. They wanted to see a longer term benefit from Rossi, and they're starting to reap that at the moment. And yeah, he's done very, very well to start the season. It's now just a case of, you know, having spent such a long time out of the game, it's like 18, 19 months he didn't play. Can he now cope with the rigours of a full 38-game season? And you know, so far, it's great signs. It's just a case of how they nurse him through it at certain times in the middle part of the season there.
Now, Napoli's Rafa Benitez has been named, Chris, as the part of the 10 men who are in the running for the Coach of the Year, FIFA World Coach of the Year award. Benitez obviously hasn't had much time at Napoli, only the early part of this season, of course, and much of what he'd be voted for was what happened at Chelsea. But from what he started at Napoli, is this a change for the positive overall, do you think, from Mazzarri? Because what he's doing at Inter right now might make people wonder if Napoli would have been better off with trying to keep hold of Mazzarri and not bringing in somebody like Benitez.
Well, I think Benitez has always shown that he has great qualities as a coach, just in his Napoli time alone, in his 10 games in charge. You know, Mazzarri had a very kind of good setup at Napoli, but it would have been a big task. It would have been almost a new job for Mazzarri this season to cope with the post-Cavani era, if you like, because a lot of the time that he was there, he had Lavezzi to kind of be the star on the field. Then, of course, he had Cavani for a couple of years where he was just magnificent. And now it was like a whole new rebuilding job that needed to be done, and Mazzarri never was quite able to get that question mark answered in defence in terms of the back three that he played with for the entirety of his time there, pretty much. They just had those issues at the back that he couldn't quite solve, and yet Benitez seems to be bit by bit solving them. They still don't have the greatest centre-backs in the world. They've brought in, obviously, Raul Albiol. They've switched to the back four, and that just little bits like that have seemed to help. They still, as I say, they have players like Federico Fernandez and Miguel Britos and Paolo Cannavaro, who each have their qualities, but they're not who you'd consider to be among the top. You get a lot of people saying that Napoli still need a top centre back, but at the moment they're doing pretty well in terms of goals conceded. I think it's only 7 in 10 games so far in the league this season. And also, he's got them working fantastically up front, just the way that he's getting the very best out of Jose Callejon already after he had a bit of an up-and-down time in Madrid. Gonzalo Higuain is proving that he's an all-round striker in the way that, for instance, he set up the goal for Callejon last night. Dries Mertens has taken a little bit of time to get used to the rigours of Serie A football, but he seems to be getting there. And Benitez seems to have this ability. He's a very trophied coach. He always seems to be able to get that little 10% extra out of players at the right times, and hopefully that will stand Napoli in good stead, because, you know, looking at the fans, looking at the passion, looking at the history of Napoli and what they've had in the past, you really want them to show their great side, and Benitez seems to be able to do that right now.
Another man who was on that list with Benitez is, of course, Conte, Antonio Conte of Juventus. Two Scudettos back-to-back, it was no surprise that he was going to be on there, but is he genuinely, do you think, in the running, especially when you look at some of the names that have A, been left off that list, and B, that have actually made it onto that list?
No, I don't think he is. Partly because of the record in Europe. Yes, they turned around the season last year in Europe after drawing their first three group games and got to the quarterfinals, and for a first time back after a 2.5-year wait, It wasn't a bad kind of it wasn't a bad year. But when you compare it to somebody like Jupp Heynckes, who obviously won the treble with Bayern Munich, then I think he just leaves Conte standing. Particularly as well when you think about how Serie A is regarded at the moment, because there's all this talk that he's not a strong league at the minute. I don't necessarily agree with that, especially this new season already has proven that there's quality and there's strength right down the league. It doesn't just because there weren't massive amounts of money spent on it and just because people tend to still watch it at home rather than go to the ground doesn't mean that it's not one of the stronger leagues in the world. And therefore, that kind of, if you take that into account, it boosts Conte's credentials as a double Scudetto winning coach. But at the same time, when you look at the kind of the lack of competition that Juve might have had at stages of last season, then I don't think that's a great shout in Conte's direction kind of thing for the award. But I'd say that if Conte were to win the Scudetto again this year and get to at least the quarterfinals of the Champions League again next year, then maybe in next year he'll have a bit of a say. But when you consider what Bayern had done last year, then I think there should probably be only one winner.
How do you rate the how Conte is mounting this charge at the moment for Juventus? He spoke so much in the early part of the season about making sure that complacency didn't creep into this side. Do you think we have seen it still on a number of occasions?
I don't know about complacency. They were blown away for 7 or 8 minutes against Fiorentina and lost the game as a result. They've only dropped 2 other points in the league all season, and those were Inter just before a Champions League game. I think that the big question mark now is what they do in Europe. As I say, Juventus have always prided themselves on their ability to win titles, and obviously they've got 29/31, depending on who you speak to. they've never really done it in Europe, though, despite a huge number of finals and semi-finals. It's just the 2 continental wins. And when you look at that, you want to see Juventus really competing in Europe. And the way that they've started their European season, disappointing draws against Copenhagen and Galatasaray, and then the loss in Madrid, it looks as though they're still just that little bit off the pace. And the game against Real Madrid next week is going to be huge for them, especially if Galatasaray beat Copenhagen again. And then... They're left really scrambling about, and the question mark now is, does he change his system to suit European football? Because the 3-5-2 has worked magnificently in Serie A the last couple of years, but it just seems to not quite get them to where they need to be in Europe. They're exposed a little bit more at certain times because of the lack of quality between the lines when they're playing that system, and so maybe it's going to take Conte to have a play around like he did against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu when he went with the back four. Maybe he needs to really have a long, hard think about how he tackles Europe before you really start to see the best of Juve on the European stage as well as the Italian one.
And just finally, Chris, we have the game tonight as well. Chievo taking on Roma in Rome. The side that really have just impressed immensely Roma in these first 9 games of the season. And getting somebody like Michael Bradley back into the side after he missed the early part of the year, it's only strengthening this Roma side at the moment. Do you see it getting stopped anytime soon?
Well, it's strange because yesterday I was looking at Roma's fixtures coming up thinking, well, they've not had the most difficult of starts. But then when you look at the games coming up, obviously Chievo tonight, they play Torino away at the weekend, then Sassuolo at home, Cagliari at home, Atalanta away. Before they play Fiorentina at home in December, that could be 14 wins. It could well be 14 wins. The way that they're playing at the moment, they're blowing apart teams like they've already played Inter away, which was a great result. They've beaten Napoli, they've beaten Lazio. So as much as people are thinking, well, the big tests are still to come. What big tests? They've got Fiorentina, Milan and Juve, really, of the kind of significant clubs still to play this season. They don't play Juve until round 18 at the start of 2014. It could well be that, with 2 big wins over Fiorentina and away to Milan in December, Roma could still be at least unbeaten by Christmas. And it's amazing to think that when, at the start of the season, you look at their squad, you say, with Osvaldo Lamela and Marquinhos having been sold, what really did they have left? Well, they have 9 wins out of 9 so far.
It's very peculiar with Roma, because I remember for the last couple of years, people have been saying, oh, this is their year to finally get back Champions League football, to start maybe pushing up the league table once again. And now it's actually happening in a year where everybody was kind of writing them off, as you say, Chris. It's completely going against the grain, as usual with Roma.
Yeah, and the obviously the remarkable statistic last year was about the amount of goals they conceded, because of the way that Zdeněk Zeman played. It was very much wide open in terms of how they defended. This season, obviously there's been the odd change, for instance, bringing in Mehdi Benatia from Udinese, but not so much so that you'd suddenly, you know, put your money on them having conceded only 1 goal in 9 games. You know, they've got the best defence in Europe. They're the only unbeaten, or the only 100% team left in Europe. And I wouldn't have even had them down as the last unbeaten or 100% side in Italy, let alone Europe. It really is a magnificent story. And the way that Rudy Garcia's got them playing at the moment, as I say, they're looking at the fixtures to come, there's not an awful lot stopping them opening a bit of a gap. And it's just a question now of how many wins they have to put together before we all start taking them seriously as a possible Scudetto winner.
Have we started that yet, Chris, though? Have we started taking them seriously, do you think, after 9 games? Or do we still need a little bit more time to see if the proof's in the pudding?
I think it needs more time. I think it needs probably Napoli and Juventus to trip each other up next week, because obviously they come head-to-head at Juventus Stadium. I think if, for instance, that was to finish in a draw, and Roma were to beat Chievo and Torino and Sassuolo in that time, then you're starting to see a gap of like 7-8 points opening up. And maybe then, you know, that'll be, 12 games in. Maybe at that point, that's when we start to look at it and say, Roma really can win the Scudetto, because, yes, they're going to come across times where they're going to have further injury worries. But they've had their injury troubles so far. They've had kind of suspensions in key areas. But when you look at the kind of backup that they have, like you say, Michael Bradley's just come back. With Maicon being out, they've brought in Torresidis, who's played well. When Balzaretti was suspended, Dodor came in and played well. And the more you look at it, the more you think, well, actually, they play as well as anyone, at least in Italy, if not Europe at the moment. They've got a certain style about them that is just really difficult for other teams to keep up with. They have a bit of strength in depth that some of the other challengers don't necessarily have. Maybe with another few victories under their belts, maybe Roma can be really taken seriously as a Scudetto champion, potential champion.
We are unfortunately going to have to wait and see, and that's all we can do. But Roma at the moment ploughing through Serie A, as you say, Chris, the only 100% side in Europe at the moment. Chris, it's an absolute pleasure to have had you back on the show once again. I do apologise about the mix-up that we had yesterday in scheduling, and I hope you can A, forgive us, and B, accept our welcome return next time we try and get you on our show, mate.
If you can guarantee a Wednesday win at the weekend, you can do anything.
I can't. Nobody can do that, unfortunately. No one can guarantee a win. I can't even find a win kind of thing at the moment. I'm leaving it on a sour note now. Damn, Chris. Cheers, mate. Thank you so much for joining us today, man. Take care. Have a good day, mate, and we will catch up very soon indeed.
Thanks, Ollie.
Cheers. Chris Folks there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Serie A and Italian football. The big games keep on coming in Italy tonight. Roma take on Chievo, bottom against top. Will little Chievo able to fool the giant that is Roma at the moment? Of course, 100%, 9 wins from 9, 1 goal conceded. As Chris was saying, just incredible to think after Zdeněk Zeman's reign of attacking football with no defence, that leaky midfield and back four last season for Roma suddenly has been tightened up and completely made absolutely rock solid this season. And of course, we've got the games coming up on Saturday. We'll run through them, I'm sure, on tomorrow's edition of World Football Daily. But I, for one, am looking forward to both Parma Juventus and AC Milan Fiorentina on Saturday when we kick off the action. Of course, as we say, Roma taking on Torino away from home. A win tonight, could it be another win? Could they really go 14 games? 14 games of perfection at the start of the season. Would that be enough to really spear ahead a Serie A title fight? Only time will tell. But a big thanks there to Chris for joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through the world of Italian football. Joining me, as always, on the show is Rafa G. And Raf, man, I will have to
I apologise at the beginning of the show, but I will apologise again to you as well as the listeners for the kerfuffle that took place yesterday. It was absolutely... I was more livid, I think, than anybody else that I wasn't able to get on and do the show yesterday after being told that I was able to. Nobody wants to have to spend an extra day in Birmingham, to then go away from Birmingham, to then to have to go back there again the next day. It's just not an experience I think I would wish on anybody else, and not an experience that I don't think anybody dreams to be in. So for that, Raf, my good man, I wholeheartedly apologise for the kerfuffle yesterday. How are you, mate, considering it's been... You know, I now feel like I've not spoken to you in ages.
It does feel like a long time, and I think that's primarily juice because of just the amount of football that's been going down. This Tuesday and Wednesday. I mean, it was kind of a bummer that we didn't get to talk juice. I'm not gonna lie, I was kind of let down. But then I was quickly picked up by just more food or by more football. And I mean, seriously, juice. I was like distracted within moments, and I'm pretty much over it, Juice. Don't worry, you're not breaking my heart too bad. It doesn't happen very often. I think both myself and the audience can easily forgive you, especially considering all the work that you put in on a daily basis during the week here at World Football Daily. But yeah, I mean, where do you want to start, Juice?
I want to start with where we kind of left off, actually, with our last show. We were talking about the crisis with Joe Hart. Rory Smith and I were discussing Hart and whether, you know, there's a chance that he could lose his job, and if that means that if he loses his job at City, does he lose his England job as well? And of course, is Manchester City cyber in action last night? Pantilimon came in, played instead of Joe Hart. Keeps a clean sheet. Sure, it's against Newcastle, but this is a Newcastle side that we have seen on occasion can actually play some very attractive football going forward. Mm-hmm. So they're no pushover, really. And Pantilimon didn't have loads to do last night, but keeping a clean sheet,
he stepped up where he needed to.
And you've got to say, you know, he's now got some form to him. You know,
it's true.
He's almost like the form guy at the moment in that Manchester City goal. He's kept the clean sheet. Fantastic stuff. So do you keep Hart out of goal? I mean, it's likely that Pantilimon would have played anyway because it's the League Cup, and Pantilimon's played in the cup runs that City have had in the past. But do you now, if you're Pellegrini, do you think, well, I'm going to keep him in? You know, he showed a good game. Last night, showed leadership as well, which is something that Hart hasn't shown in the last few weeks and in the last few months. Do you keep him Pantilimon? Does Joe Hart get relegated to the sideline for a Premier League game?
To be honest, three things. If it were me, I would probably have already told Joe Hart that, look, we're starting Pantilimon in the League Cup match. But this is going to be kind of like a start of a break for you, so just expect it. You know, go relax. Your career here is safe for the foreseeable future here at City. I'm giving you this kind of break to go and clear your mind, so you can come back and be the best possible keeper that you can be, knowing that we are supporters behind you. But that's probably not what happened. What probably is going to happen, or what should happen is that they should probably just place Hart back in this weekend when they pick up some Premier League fixtures ahead. I'm not sure exactly who they're playing off the top of my head, but I mean, seriously, throw him in for the Premier League. Just let him know that you are kind of fully behind him. But what could happen, and I kind of see this happening just because this is the fickle nature of the game, and the money is really what's riding it. Pantilimon's now the new keeper. He starts at the weekend, and it's not because that they say that they're giving Hart some time to kind of breathe and relax and get some things off of his mind or whatever, just rest, relaxation, whatever. But ultimately, it's because they're looking to secure that goalkeeping position with a better keeper because they've already gone past him.
Well, they take on Norwich this weekend, and Norwich, of course, were knocked out by Manchester United in the Capital One Cup last night. So it's a Norwich side, though, that have started the season reasonably comfortably. You know, Houghton and his Norwich side has been in and out of form, to say the least, and I think we haven't seen the best of Norwich, but I also think we haven't seen the worst of them yet. I'd be fair with that. So I think that City, I'm not sure if they can afford to really, like, if they go with Pantilimon, I think that's, you can't get away with saying, oh, it's a game against a smaller side. Because as we've seen in the Premier League this season with Manchester City, they've struggled against the smaller side. You know, Hart made those mistakes against Cardiff. There have been other occasions as well when City haven't kind of risen to the occasion against these smaller sides. So I think if they put Pantilimon in instead of Hart, then I think that is a big sign that actually this is now a switch that could become a permanent one, at least until January, for Manchester City. And to be honest, I think it's the right one to make as well. If you're not confident in your goalkeeper, then you shouldn't be subject to so much scrutiny that I'm sure Tottenham will kind of go through for changing that goalkeeper. You know, it's one of the most important positions on the pitch. And for people to say, oh, you can't drop Joe Hart, he's England's number one, you need him to have confidence, etc. I know people will probably say I'm being quite flippant, and I was very much backing Joe Hart kind of 18 months ago, especially when after the European Championships, and I was saying, look, this is a guy that's confident and playing well. This is now a Joe Hart that isn't playing at that same standard. And if he does drop and he continues to drop, then your place should be at risk. It shouldn't be on reputation alone. It's something that we talk about with international footballers, that these players get picked on purely reputation and nothing else. And I think it would be far better for Pellegrini to show that, look, I'm new in town and there is competition for places across the board. And I think it would really liven up, A, the positional battle at City, and I think it'll also, I think it also will be Joe Hart. It will show he's got to fight for it. And it might end up bringing actually more out of Hart than people thought. It might pull out the best that we've seen out of him.
Sure. I'd like to think that Joe Hart kind of rises above this and only betters himself and kind of, you know, uses this to stiffen up that backbone of his. I agree with you, Juice, overall that there's a ton of talent in Joe Hart. It's just a matter of probably being kind of just overworked and having kind of a nonstop schedule for too long.
It's going to be very interesting indeed.
Really, really what it is, Juice, can I just be honest? It's because he's English. If he was an American, he could understand that, look, I got to keep my nose to the grindstone. I've got this career for the next 30 years or so. I'll be tending goal for Man City when I'm well into my 50s. And, you know,
you think an American keeper wouldn't have as much hysteria around it and people would be a little bit more forgiving? Is that what you kind of think?
You know what? I do think that mentally an American keeper is probably more stable. I know about Timmy Howard when he was at Manchester United. He wasn't a bad keeper. You know, it was just a tough situation. But I do think that generally American keepers probably pretty good on the mental scale.
That's very very Larry David of you there. Pretty good.
I try, man. I try. I give you my little insights into my life where I can, sir.
All right. So, of course, there's plenty of action elsewhere around Europe and whatnot. Before we move away from the Premier League, just quickly, Raf, your thoughts on AVB. You made that very bold statement of slating the fans for making it seem like an away game last weekend at White Hart Lane. Last night, the fans really did rally behind them, and he kind of said after his game, after the game, after they went through on penalties, only just Tottenham, kind of said, "Oh, I was really pleased with them. You know, they really got behind us once again." Do you think AVB's escaped it then? Because that's a real big thing to call out the fans, isn't it? To be a manager and to say, "Hey, look, our fans didn't get behind us. I'm disappointed with them." To have a go at the general public who spend their hard-earned money to come and see you. I think if he's managed to avoid any sort of backlash now from this, he's done extremely well to get away from it. Because that could have been, you know, that if that happened 12 months ago at the start of last season when he just joined and there was a lot of kerfuffle and Tottenham fans were saying, well, they weren't sure they were happy about AVB being there, that could have been horrendous. Now, it almost shows the position of power that he's got is that they've bought into his idea. The fans are buying into AVB. And it's not like he can say anything. You know, he can't do what the Beatles did and say they were bigger than Jesus or anything like that, you know. But he can get away, or he has seemingly got away with saying that he was disappointed with the fans, which is miraculous. I don't think there are many managers that would be able to do that, do you?
It's crazy to think that just, you know, the time that's passed since he's, you know, gone from Chelsea and just that situation that he was in there, and to what he's found himself in Spurs. I'm kind of shocked by it because it does seem like it came quick, Juice, to me. Like he's kind of settling in a bit fast. And yeah, he's trying to establish a relationship with not just the club. You're talking about the fans of the club, the extended family, if you will. And that's a lot tougher. You know, you see the people within your club day in, day out. You know, I'm sure he has a specific relationship with them, but that is tough to kind of call out your fans like that quickly. And I think that, you know, kind of, yeah, the style of win that they ended up kind of pulling out over Hull last night, is probably something that kind of sweeps that comment under the rug a little bit. So, yeah, then that was a really incredible game, just how that all unfolded.
It's I think AVB's done very well to escape that without too many repercussions. Just finally, because we're talking Italian football with Chris earlier, but need to touch on the Spanish football from last night. And, you know, it's very easy to stay with Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Barcelona when we talk Spanish football, but it's made even easier when not only did Real Madrid put 7 past Sevilla in an emphatic victory, and really a victory that they've kind of needed for a bit of time now, something big and impressive to prove to everybody that Ancelotti has got it on the ball and is going right. But not only that, Bale gets 2. I remember there was somebody put up something last night that said, I love football sometimes. Gareth Bale's winning 2-0 against Sevilla and Tottenham are drawing with Hull in the League Cup. Isn't that justice or something like that? But Bale gets 2. Ronaldo, though, then goes and gets a hat-trick. Benzema gets 2 as well. It's like, that's almost like the game for Bale. He starts, he's got 2 inside half an hour, and you think, oh, this is me making my moment. I'm starting to shine. I'm coming through. I'm going to lead this team. And Ronaldo's like, nah, you're not. I'm going to get 3. Oh, you've got 2. Oh, nice work, Gareth. I'll take the hat-trick, though. Don't you worry about it. And even Benzema then getting in on the action kind of takes takes the shine away from Bale's performance last night. But do you agree with me, Raf? I mean, do you think Madrid did need a win of this emphatic style, emphatic nature? And are you also a little bit, you know, I wouldn't want to cast aspersions too much, but I mean, that's conceding 3. You put 7 past anybody, it's great, but you can still concede 3 on the night. It's still not a clean sheet, 100% perfect kind of game, is it?
Right. Well, this was one of the games I actually kind of watched a lot of as well yesterday. I think it was very telling that, you know, or it had to be Gareth Bale. You know, I think Bale kind of answered some critics right off the bat. I'm sure there's a lot of pointer or you know, finger pointing going on within the first 30 minutes. And then of course, Ronaldo scores. And there were, yeah, just the 3-2 first half was just really, really fun to watch. The penalties being given. Mm. But you did kind of, you know, I was wondering how they were going to come out in the second half. Obviously, Ronaldo stepping up, well done, well done. You are in my notes, Juice, and I kind of hate giving you credit sometimes, but you said it a couple days. With the lineup that they put out there, they were only going one way. You know, they're only going to attack, and it surely left themselves open with a horrendous defense, man. Giving up some, you know, a crappy penalty, and giving up kind of essentially 2 soft goals. You know, Sevilla didn't work too crazy hard for them, and they had their chances as well. So I hate to agree with you, but I do think that lineup was only going to be attacking. There wasn't much support in defense. There weren't many people coming back to defend, and really, you know, it shows. So if you are planning to have a quote unquote Mike D'Antoni run and gun NBA style offense, to throw that out there, welcome back to the NBA season, by the way, here in the States.
Yeah, we won't talk about that opening night for.
Oh, I know. We'll talk about that after.
Why do you think I died of shame when we didn't have a show yesterday?
I mean, I know. It's all right. Listen, if you're gonna have that kind of offense, you know, you have to know that you're gonna you just have to outscore them. You can pull up the Oregon example. You almost have to outscore them. You have to kind of run with them, and that's something that Sevi obviously weren't capable of doing. But if you run that kind of offense up against a Barcelona, I think that they can kind of absorb that and take advantage of Real Madrid. So unfortunately, that wasn't too promising of a win for me. I definitely kind of saw some of their cracks, and I thank you for that, sir.
Just finally, before we finish up, ref, because we do need to get shooting and moving and grooving in just a mo. But do you think it's right the Spanish press are calling that first goal from Bale a wonder goal? It's a great passing move. No. Don't get me wrong, but you know, Bale wonder goal in his first start at the Bernabeu. I don't.
No, it's beyond the hype, Juice. I mean, it's. It's nice, it's great, but no, it's not a wonder goal. I mean, there was...
Especially from what we know Bale, kind of, his wonder goals can be.
Sure,
It's a little off the mark on that one.
Agreed. And in general, I mean, just, yeah, you can't let in three, you know, and call that like an emphatic win. I mean, just the way that they're reporting it in Spain is just crazy hyperbole I don't know. Real Madrid, they'll need to kind of firm up that defense if they're going to make any kind of run at La Decima this season. Because if you look at teams like Barcelona, like Bayern Munich, they're going to be able to absorb, you know, that attack and really, really come at them in the counter and put them to sword there. And so good luck to Real Madrid. They have to figure out that back line and figure out, well, hopefully getting Alonso back, I think, and back mm-hmm. into that lineup, however much that might slow down the potential attack, is going to kind of bring some stability and balance back.
It puts that kind of enforcer, like, right. level head right in front of that back mm-hmm. four, and puts Sergio Ramos back in the back line, as it didn't work out for them against Barca on the weekend. And there is still problems at Madrid. There are still things that need to be sorted out, but a step in the right direction, you have to say, when scoring seven and Gareth Bale
I was thoroughly entertained.
I mean, Bale's free kick's a little bit lucky, but we'll let him off that one. I'm sure he's going to put in a few decent goals at some point. It'd be nice to see him hit a cracker, because we obviously, his first goal was that one from like 2 yards out. Last night was like simple tapping and a dodgy free kick. It's like, well, you're scoring, but it's not really the £86 million price tag kind of goal that we were all expecting. There is football on tonight. Raf Roma have a chance to extend their lead at the top of the Serie A table. They take on Chievo this evening, and there's a little bit of football action elsewhere about. We're also going to get into the weekend tomorrow on Friday's edition of World Football Daily. Start to look ahead to the big fixtures. And I tell you what, there's a big one in Greece this weekend, Raf. Panathinaikos against Olympiakos. That is a grudge match and a half. We might have to take a little trip across to Greece. And
Halloween to you, sir.
Oh yeah, happy Halloween to you, man. Are you taking the little one out and treating and tricking and basically
absolutely. I've been working on the word trick or treat. Yeah, I've been working on the word trick or treat with her for a while, but it's not working. I don't think she's gonna pull it off. I'm hoping that she's in a lion costume. I'm hoping I can get her to roar a couple times in the evening.
Yeah,
I don't think it's gonna happen, but that's okay. We'll give out some candy as well, and I got some fantastic candy to give away, which also means I have some fantastic candy left over for me to eat. So I'm living high today, man.
Pretty happy about that one, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, I expect a sugar rush raffet on tomorrow's show. until then, take care. Have a cracking Halloween. Enjoy your evening. I'm going to have all the tricks and treats that I need watching Roma against Chievo this evening. Take care. Have a good one. And we'll see you at the same time tomorrow. Juicy.